Without looking at a clock, do you know what time it is? You probably do, more or less, since your body has a remarkable ability to keep track of time all on its own. Your biological clock is set to circadian rhythms, the 24-hour cycles that regulate your sleep, your digestion, your alertness, and other physical and mental functions. But these days, work schedules, electric lights, streaming videos, and smartphones tend to pull us out of sync with our natural rhythms, and that can cost us dearly in terms of physical and mental health. Russell Foster is a professor of circadian neuroscience and the director of the Sleep and Circadian Neuroscience Institute at the University of Oxford. He's written a new book called Lifetime: Your Body Clock and Its Essential Roles in Good Health and Sleep, in which he offers practical advice on how to reset your daily schedule to take advantage of your body's incredible timekeeping abilities. Here he is with five big ideas from the book.
For our bodies to function, we need the correct materials delivered to the right tissues and organs at the correct concentration at the optimum time of day. Without this exquisite coordination in time and space, growth, metabolism, memory formation, decision-making, protection from infection, the repair of damaged tissues, and indeed sleep itself, all fail. And it's our body clock or circadian rhythms that provide this time structure for life. My book, Lifetime, unpacks the science of circadian rhythms, and based on the science, provides guidance regarding how to use this knowledge to improve our health. Research on circadian rhythms has provided us with a remarkable understanding of how our 24-hour circadian cycles are generated. And in parallel, we also now appreciate why these rhythms are so important to our health. I'm Professor of Circadian Neuroscience and Director of the Sleep and Circadian Neuroscience Institute at the University of Oxford. And Lifetime has been my opportunity to introduce this critical area of knowledge to all sectors of society, from young to old, from employee to employer, and also I want to attract the attention of the medical profession, the business sector, frontline staff, and all those who struggle with a 24/7 society. I hope readers will find multiple insights or big ideas in Lifetime, but the five big ideas that I would like to focus upon are: 1. You can't adapt to the night shift. The entrenched arrogance of being human means that most of us assume that we're above the grubby world of biology and that we can do what we want at whatever time we choose. This assumption underpins the modern 24/7 society and an economy that is dependent upon night shift workers to stock our supermarkets, clean our offices, run our global financial services, protect us from crime, repair our rail and road infrastructure, and of course, care for the sick and injured when they are most vulnerable. Our full-scale occupation of the night has been possible because of the widespread commercialization of electric light across the world since the 1950s. But this extraordinary and wonderful resource has come with unintended consequences. We have, in effect, declared war upon the night, and without really appreciating what we've done, we've thrown away an essential part of our biology, our sleep. We are, of course, not able to do what we want at whatever time we choose. We are governed by a 24-hour biological clock that adapts our entire biology to the different demands of the 24-hour day. The problem is that night shift workers are active when they should be asleep and try and sleep when their biology is prepared for wake. And no matter how many years a night shift worker spends on permanent night shifts, nearly all, well, around 97% of night shift workers remain synchronized to daytime. This failure to shift is directly related to light exposure. The daily cycle of light and dark is essential for setting the circadian clock to the 24-hour rotation of the Earth. Artificial light in the office or factory is very dim compared to environmental light. And after finishing the night shift, an individual will experience bright natural light, and the circadian system will lock onto this brighter light signal as daytime, which of course it is. So, and perhaps surprisingly, the biological clock of night shift workers and day shift workers are aligned to the day-night cycle in the same way. And when at work, the night shift worker has to fight against an entire physiology telling them they should be asleep. The key point is that by working against this deep biology, night shift workers become vulnerable to a range of illnesses. Short-term problems include fluctuations in mood, a focus on negative rather than positive experiences, Irritability and impulsivity, loss of empathy, increased drug use, ranging from coffee to illegal drugs, and reduced concentration, problem-solving, and creativity. Long-term problems in night shift workers include abnormal stress responses and disrupted immunity, increased risks of heart attack, obesity and type 2 diabetes, cancer, and mental illness, ranging from depression to psychosis. As way of illustration, a recent study showed that night shift workers during the pandemic were more likely to be admitted to hospital after contracting COVID-19. And studies over the last few decades show that long-term night shift nurses are more likely to get breast cancer and colorectal cancer. Indeed, the correlations between night shift work and cancer are now considered so strong that shift work is officially classified as probably carcinogenic by the World Health Organization. My second big insight is when we take our medications really matters. Because our biology changes so profoundly over the 24-hour day, regulated by the circadian system, both the severity of disease and many of the medications we take show a huge variation across the day-night cycle. So, for example, if we consider stroke and heart attacks, recent studies have shown that there is an overall 50% increase in the chance of a stroke or heart attack between 6 a.m. and noon compared to the rest of the day. Now, drugs that are used to treat high blood pressure are called antihypertensives. And when these are taken before bedtime rather than in the morning, the risk of stroke or heart attack is halved. Let's also consider cancer. When you have your chemotherapy really matters. For example, children with leukemia were given anti-cancer drugs either in the morning or evening. Remarkably, the risk of relapse was 4.6 times higher for the morning schedule than for the evening schedule. Another study showed that for women with ovarian cancer, given the same drug but at different times, survival in one group was 45% after 5 years versus 10% survival in the other group. Same drug, same concentration, but at different times produced huge differences in long-term survival. And a final example would be vaccination. Elderly individuals were vaccinated against the N1H1 flu virus either in the morning or in the afternoon. Those individuals who were vaccinated in the morning showed an antibody response 3 times higher than those vaccinated in the afternoon. The third next big idea is when we eat affects our metabolic health. The first point to make is that in Europe, there has been a gradual change in our eating habits over the centuries. Before about 1100, the main meal of the day was breakfast. During the Middle Ages, from 1100 to 1500, this shifted to noon. But as industrialization proceeded, with the separation of where people worked from where they live, the main meal of the day shifted later in time. Today, with long commutes and work that spans multiple time zones, the major meal of the day has been pushed to an irregular mid to late evening time slot. And this shift in meal timing has been bad for our health. We now understand that evening eaters are at a greatly increased risk of type 2 diabetes and obesity. For example, when individuals were given the same meal in the morning at 8 a.m. and then again 12 hours later at 8 p.m., blood glucose levels were 17% higher after the evening meal. A detailed study compared individuals who were given the same 20-week reduced-calorie diet, but either consuming most of their calories early in the day or late in the day between 6 p.m. and bedtime. Those who ate late in the day showed less weight loss compared to individuals who ate early in the day. My fourth insight is that mental illness and sleep disruption are linked in the brain. Regardless of the type of mental illness, whether depression, bipolar, or schizophrenia, all of these conditions are strongly associated with some form of sleep and circadian rhythm disruption. And in some cases, this can be very severe. These links have been known for a very long time, but despite these early observations, the cause of sleep disruption has been largely dismissed as an unfortunate side effect of medication or the lack of employment. This is emphatically not the case. So what are the real links between sleep disruption and mental illness? The first point to make is that the brain circuits involved in mental health overlap with the circuits associated with normal sleep and circadian rhythm generation. As the pathways in the brain are connected, it's no surprise that sleep disruption occurs in mental illness. A change in the brain circuit that leads to mental illness will also affect sleep. But it gets a bit more complicated. Disruption of sleep will disrupt our emotional, cognitive, and physiological health, which will exacerbate the mental illness. And of course, the mental illness will make sleep worse. Once started, this positive feedback loop will rapidly develop to amplify the poor sleep and the poor mental health. So we ask the question, what happens to psychiatric symptoms if we reduce sleep disruption? A major Oxford-based trial on nearly 4,000 individuals showed that improving sleep alone produced a highly significant reduction in paranoia and hallucinations. Excitingly, these findings demonstrate that the treatment of sleep disruption in mental illness provides a powerful new therapeutic target for the reduction of symptoms. And the final and fifth big idea I want to discuss is, our sleep patterns are all different and one size does not fit all. Advice about sleep is frequently transformed into strident orders that resemble the commands shouted by a regimental sergeant major, such as, you must get 8 hours of sleep, waking up in the middle of the night is bad, you must be up by 7 a.m. or you will die. Rather than enjoying our sleep, for many it is now an endless cause of anxiety, often made worse by inaccurate metrics delivered by sleep apps. I'd like to stress, our individual sleep pattern can be likened to our shoe size. One size does not fit all, and making us all sleep in the same way would not only be foolish, but potentially harmful. In fact, depending on who you are, the normal range for sleep in adults is between 6 to 10 or even 11 hours per night. And waking at night is part of normal sleep for most of us, and nothing to worry about. The failure to recognize this individual variation in our sleep is why advice in the media can be either overly simplistic or deeply unhelpful. So it's important to work out for ourselves what works for each of us, and it's not complicated. You are probably not getting enough sleep if you feel that you are not operating at peak performance during the day, are dependent upon an alarm clock to get you out of bed, oversleep and get up late on free days, such as the weekend or holiday, take a long time to wake up and feel alert, feel sleepy and irritable during the day, you feel the need for a mid-afternoon nap, you are unable to concentrate or exhibit overly impulsive behaviours, you crave caffeinated and sugar-rich drinks, receive advice from family, friends or work colleagues that your behaviour has changed. Specifically, you are more irritable, lack empathy, are less reflective, more impulsive and disinhibited, and finally, you are aware that you experience increased worry, anxiety, mood swings, and depression. If you experience such symptoms, you're probably not getting the sleep that you need. Now, many people think that sleep is just what you get, but this is simply not true. And you can use the tips and advice in Lifetime to create your own individual optimum sleep strategy. And once you've found it, stick to it. So in conclusion, by embracing the big ideas in Lifetime about our sleep and biological rhythms, we can all be healthier, more creative, make better decisions, gain more from the company of others, and view the world and all it has to offer with a greater sense of curiosity and wonder. My key message is that the foolish and the wise all die in the end, but the circadian and sleep wise will, on average, sleep better, be happier, be healthier, and very probably live longer.
Thank you, Russell. That was Russell Foster with 5 big ideas from Lifetime, your body clock and its essential roles in good health and sleep. For more advice on scheduling your perfect day, be sure to check out our e-course with Daniel Pink based on his book, When, The Science of Perfect Timing. It's here in the app. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.